latkes also, or is it just latkes on the tablecloth?
Tinfoil.
Just on the bottom of it? Is it tinfoil?
Okay, this week's parsha is Parshas Miketz, page 222. It was at the end of 2 years. Paro dreamed. And behold, he was standing by the Nile. And then the Gemara describes the dream of Paro. Now, the fact that the Parsha begins was at the end of 2 years, the Medrash says, or sages say, that actually Yosef was in jail 2 years longer than it was supposed to be. And then the last week's Parsha, the Torah tells us how, while he was in jail, he met the wine butler and the baker of Paro. He interpreted their dreams. The dream of the wine butler was that he would get his job back. And after interpreting his dream, Yosef makes a request. This is last week's Parsha, page 218. Ki im zachartani itcha, but you shall remember me with you, when things shall improve for you. You shall do with me a kindness. You shall mention it to Parai, and then you would take me out of this building. So from the fact that that Yosef engaged a wine butler, asking him to remember him and help him get out when he returns to his position by Paro, because of that, he was punished, the Medrash says, and because of that, his stay in the jail was extended for another 2 years. And then Vayimi Kesh and Asayin Yamim, and it was at the end of 2 years, then Paro had the dream, it was time for Yosef to come out of jail. So the Medrash says that Yosef was incarcerated 2 years longer than he was supposed to have been because of the fact that he said to the wine butler, remember me, take me out.
So how old is he now, 32?
I don't know. Offhand, I don't know. Now, the question that all the Rafashim and all the commentaries ask is, well, what did Yosef do wrong? Was there something wrong with asking the wine butler to remember him? I mean, we're supposed to do hishtablis. We're supposed to put in our efforts to help ourselves, to provide for ourselves. And if so, what exactly was Yosef doing wrong by the fact that he asked the wine butler to help him out of jail? So the commentary of Ben Abachaya in last week's Parsha, this week's Parsha, says like this, that we should never think that Yosef HaTzadik, when he was asking the wine butler to help him get out, that because of that, he was putting his trust in a human being and not in Hashem. We should never think that Yosef was putting his complete trust in a human being. Rather, in Yosef's mind, the wine butler is Hashem's emissary. Right? Hashem has his emissaries by which he helps people. And therefore, in Yosef's mind, now that he's meeting up with this wine butler with the dream, so he sees this as a means that Hashem is sending him to engage in to help himself out. So it's not random. It's not like he's putting his trust in this wine butler. Hashem has his agents, Hashem has his means, and that is how Yosef sees the wine butler. Excuse me?
The butler
is not going to do anything for Yosef if Yosef doesn't say anything to him.
Okay.
But the emissary is going to figure it out on his own.
But the butler must feel, or Yosef feels the butler must be special because he wasn't killed. So maybe
well, that's part of the idea that he sees that here is the man is being sent to him.
Right.
He's telling the man he's going to get his chance to be back with Pyro again.
Right.
So therefore, it would seem that this is Hashem's malach, this is Hashem's agent to help him get out.
And in fact, he did, but it just took him 2 years.
It just took him 2 years. So the question is, so what did he do wrong?
Yeah.
But the first thing that Rabbeinu Bachaya points out is, let's not think that Yosef forgot about Hashem, and that Yosef just put his trust in this man. That's not what it was. However, the way that Rabbeinu Bachaya explains with the shortcoming of Yosef is in the following way. And actually, he does this in this week's Parsha, quoting the Chayvus HaLevavos, in which the Chayvus HaLevavos goes through 8 stages of trust. a person goes through 8 stages in who he, in what he puts his trust in throughout his life. He starts off saying that when you are an infant, or actually yeah, when you're an infant, what do you put your trust into? What is it that you're relying upon your trust into? Your mother's breast. Because that's where the milk comes from. The next stage is that a human peaks his trust in it when he gets older, right? The child develops and has a little bit more recognition and perception of what's going on. Then his trust is in his mother. After that, when he gets older and he realizes that he and his mother need his father, he puts his trust in his father. Okay, after that, the stage after that is when a person starts realizing that he can take care of himself, he starts putting his trust in himself. The next stage is that, again, as he gets older and wiser, and he realizes that he can't do everything. There are definitely things that you need Hashem for. You need Hashem for rain. There are things that are beyond within a person's powers. And when eventually a person gets old enough to realize there are certain things outside of his powers, and those are the things that he realizes, oh, this is what I need to put my trust in Hashem. Okay? The next stage is where he starts realizing that even the things that are within his power to do, there too he puts his trust in Hashem. But if I understand him correctly, the Rabbeinu Bachai correctly, that stage is a stage in which there are certain things that you do that in your mind, you know, if I do this, I'm set. If I do this, I'm set. If I engage in a certain type of endeavor to take care of myself, I'm set. This is going to take care of me. But then there are other things that really aren't as sure that they will take care of your needs. But you know, what you say is, I'm going to do this anyway and put my trust in Hashem that He's going to help me with this. So I think this is more like a psychological thing that a person goes through in their mind. There are certain types of endeavors that in their mind, like, oh, this is, no, I got it made. I can take care of myself. There are other endeavors that clearly are not as sure, but because of the fact that they really don't necessarily force me to have to really, you know, put in tremendous amount of work, which can really, you know, deter from a person's peace of mind. A person says, you know, I'll engage in a smaller type of endeavor, and I'll put my trust in Hashem that He'll provide with me in this smaller endeavor. Okay, so it's kind of like a split. The next stage is that a person comes to a point where no matter what he does, even the things that a person would say, if I do this, I'm set. If I do this, I can take care of myself without question. There too, a person realizes that it's not his endeavors, it's not his powers. It's about Hashem giving me success, and I realize that. The final stage, which is the highest level, which the Rebbe Bachaya says is a very high level of trust in Hashem, is basically when you really don't engage in endeavors, in the sense that if Hashem puts me in a certain situation, this is where He wants me to be. So if this is where He wants me to be, this is where I will be. And when Hashem decides to send his emissaries to change my situation, He will do so. Sorry?
Why would you do anything?
Well, we're talking about, well, you stand from a chair. Wait, I mean, the point that, I mean, that typical movement, you know, you have to do. The question is, you know, how much do I have to start? So let me tell you how he says it. The way he says it is like this. The highest level of trust is where, again, you know, we have to breathe and we have to eat and, you know, these are not things, we're not talking about those kinds of things. And the truth is he talking about, come to think of it, is he talking about, you know, your regular endeavors of Parnassa? I don't know. But what he is talking about is that if you look at Yosef's example, Yosef's in jail. Hashem wants him to be there. The highest level of betachin is where a person says, if this is where Hashem wants me to be, then I'm going to stay here, and when He decides it's time for me to get out, He will send the agent the means to get me out. I don't need to engage something to get me out. That's the highest level of trust. That's the highest level. This is a very high level. This is not necessarily the level that we nowadays do, or that how many people do, even in the times of Yosef. But the point is, the highest level of betachin, says the Chayvus HaBavis, Again, what the Rebbeinu Bachai is bringing down is where a person looks at the state that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts him in, and the person says, if this is where Hashem wants me to be, then this is where it is best for me to be, and I will remain here until the Rebbeinu Shlom decides it's time for my situation to change. And therefore, I don't even engage in trying to change it. Yosef, says Rebbeinu Bachai, should have been on that highest level. And at that highest level, it is not for him to ask the wine butler to help him out, but rather for Yosef to accept whatever Hashem brings upon him and to allow Hashem to take care of the rest. This is clearly, again, my understanding is, this is a level of what we call betachon gamur, complete trust, in which I'm not even necessarily engaging in any kind of efforts of changing my situation, providing for my situation. Again, is he talking about making a regular livelihood, a regular daily livelihood? He's talking about that also. He doesn't mention that. He could be talking about that because there are opinions that say that there are people who can bring themselves to that level in which they just they live with complete trust in Hashem and that Hashem will provide for them with everything. That's it's a level for certain individuals. And even this level by Yosef, the Rebbeinu Bachai said, is a level for tzaddikim, for righteous people, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know, is demanding from tzaddikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was demanding of Yosef that if Yosef didn't reach this level, he would be punished for it. But Yosef is meant to be on the level of betachin, in which a person accepts whatever Hashem has brought upon him, and puts his trust in Hashem that when the time comes for the situation to change, that Hashem will change it. You don't get yourself involved in trying to change it. But rather, you put your trust in Hashem, complete trust in Hashem, complete reliance in Hashem, that He puts you where you need to be, and it will take you out in due time.
So then is it possible that if he hadn't asked the Tzar HaMashkim,
then he would have gotten out earlier.
It would have happened immediately.
He would have,
power would have dreamt,
yes.
And immediately would have been.
Yes.
Now it waited 2 years for
yes.
it to happen.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, right now he's older than 17.
Excuse me?
Right now he's older than 17. Right now he's about 30. Come to think of it.
32, yeah.
Come to 30.
But it's something maybe as you get older, you have a different mindset.
Well, clearly. That's for sure.
Need
There's definitely different mindsets and different, and we grow, and we're supposed to get smarter, and we're supposed to grow, get better. And that is where Yosef was supposed to be. So Yosef, you know, was put to this challenge, right, in the difficult state that he was. He was put to this challenge, and here was the challenge, his way to get out, his way to engage a means to get out. And for Yosef, that was considered a shortcoming in his trust in Hashem. Now others learn that the problem with Yosef was the fact that Yosef's In a regular situation, Yosef would have been correct in trying to engage some kind of means of getting himself out of danger, out of jail. But Yosef's situation was unique. Everything happening around Yosef was miraculous. Everything happening around him. His ability to survive being sold as a slave. He becomes a slave, and everything just goes great. He finds favor in the eyes of his masters, all right, his master's wife, makes problems for him. But other than that, his situation, wherever he lands up, is one in which he finds favor in the eyes of his master, in which he succeeds. There, it's very clear to Yosef that his situation is a very unique situation. His divine providence, the Ashkocha Pratis, the divine providence dealing with Yosef is beyond the norm. A person who already sees that Hashem is putting him in a state of beyond the natural, now has to continue on that level and be on the above the natural. Okay? Now, the thing is that if you learn like the Rebbeinu Bachai, the Rebbeinu Bachai is saying that there is a level in which a person doesn't engage in ishtadlus, doesn't engage in efforts. And there is a big discussion amongst early commentaries about whether there is such a level or not. According to some, no matter what, a person has to engage in some level. Ishtadlus has to be in some level. You always have to realize that everything is dependent on Hashem, and your ishtadlus is nothing more than fulfilling the curse that was given to Adam, by the sweat of your brow you'll eat bread. and maybe, and the amount of hishtadlus of efforts you have to put in, again, for a person who has a high level of bitachon, is maybe less than a person on a lower level of bitachon. But there has to be some kind of hishtadlus. And therefore, one would have to wonder, so according to that opinion, what did Yosef do wrong? But perhaps we can say that Yosef said to the wine butler in the end of last week's parsha, when after he interprets the dream, so Yosef says to him, you should remember me with you, you should remember me and take me out. The fact that the Medrash says that the 2 years for the fact that Yosef said, you'll remember me and remember me, or you'll remember me and take me out, the wording of Yosef seems to imply that he's putting a lot into this. It may be a bit subconscious, but there's something more. You know, he can engage, he can ask. But Chazal saw in the wording of Yosef that he's doing a bit too much. For Yosef, this is a bit too much. And therefore, he's not just engaging in the minimum ishtadlis, the minimum amount of effort, he's kind of going over. And because he's going over, therefore, he's punished. And others learn, interestingly, and again, I think this explanation would have to be working with the idea of that there is a level of putting your complete trust in Hashem without putting your efforts. And that is, according to Rebbe Chaya says pretty clear, Yosef was punished. Because Yosef didn't bring himself to a higher level of trust in Hashem, he was punished. Others learn that it's not a punishment. But rather, depending on how you perceive things, that's how Hashem deals with you. See, if you're the kind of person who needs to put their efforts into things, then Hashem is going to deal with you in a natural way. If you can bring yourself to a higher level, then Hashem responds in kind and deals with you in a higher level. If Yosef brings himself to a higher level in which his betachen is on such a high level that he doesn't need to engage in any kind of effort, then Hashem will do a miracle for him. But once he starts engaging in some kind of effort, that means that he's not going beyond the natural. That means he's working within the natural. Well, if he's working within the natural, then the natural takes its course. And in this case, the natural was that the wine butler, who was no big tzaddik, forgot about him. Until Hashem sent the reminder.
Then why would he even talk to him in the first place? Like, it doesn't make sense if he's going to, it's like wasting time.
Who says waste? He didn't know it was wasting time. Why would Yosef know it's wasting time?
Right, but if...
Yosef could have very well thought that the person would feel gratitude to him and do something. At the end of the day, he didn't.
Yeah.
But to say that, why should he engage? Why not? Worth a try. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it didn't work. And the fact that it didn't work is not, you know, again, there's different mafarshim about this, but it can be understood also on a natural level also, you know, that people forget. People are ungrateful, and people forget. And therefore, once Yosef only engages within the parameters, within the boundaries of nature, by putting in an effort, there's nothing wrong with doing it. But if that's how you do things, that's how Hashem responds.
I mean, I'm asking, didn't know how to approach, or maybe he did want to do, but he didn't know how to approach him.
He brought him the cup every single day.
Still, but to ask a favor of the king, of the Paro, now he had an opportunity to actually help Paro.
It says he forgot him. It doesn't say that. It says he forgot him.
Okay.
But I'm saying that the point is that if he wouldn't have forgotten him, it probably could have been a chance for him to say something. Torah says he forgot him, and then when the dream came, then he remembered, there was one time this kid, this Jewish kid in jail that kind of helped me out. Maybe he can do something for you too.
Ashpeiros was, you know, the dream too. He woke up in the middle of the night and he thought,
right.
Ashpeiros didn't have a dream.
No, not a dream, but he woke up and he opened the book. And he couldn't sleep. And
he couldn't sleep, and somebody read to him the book, right.
Right, and Mordechai thought he
was. Right. Okay. So Yosef, so Parah has his dreams, and Parah needs an interpretation, and as we just mentioned, the wine butler talks about how he had his dreams interpreted by Yosef, and the Torah says, this is on page 224, Pasuk Yudalid, Vayikra et Yosef, he called Yosef, Vayiritzu min habor, and they heard him out of the pit, Vayigalach, Vayichalef sim leisav. This is Pasuk Yudalad. Okay. Vayigalach, and he got his hair cut. Vayichalev sim leisav, he changed his clothing. Vayavoyo pare, and he came to pare. So, the Yalkut Me'asua brought down in the Sefer called Tivcha Yabiu from a Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, who's a Rav in Bnei Brak, very prominent Rav in Bnei Brak. He brings down from the Yalkut Me'am Loyes comments on this part of the parsha where it says that before Yosef went to speak to the king that he changed his clothing. So the Yalkut Me'am Loyes says, if before we stand before a king of flesh and blood, we have to make sure that we're dressed appropriately. All the more so, we stand before Hashem and davening, we have to make sure that we're dressed properly. That's what the Alpha Mendeleev says. So, if you think, excuse me?
The thing is, if, so he really, I mean, they want him to look good. It seems like he didn't really
the proper thing to, when you stand before a king, is to wear the proper attire. So the Malkut Mendeleev says, if that's true by a king of flesh and blood, all the more so, by a Kaddish Baruch Melech Malchayim Lachim, when we stand before him in davening.
So then is it almost that Paro was, you know, quote unquote, not saying he was the king obviously, but that it was almost as if Yosef was also staying in front of Kaddish Baruch at that point?
No.
Okay.
It just means to say that if we have to show this, if this is the kind of honor we have to show a king of flesh and blood, all the more so Hashem, when we stand before him. So Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein tells of his own personal experience when he said apparently he was visiting the Belzer Rebbe Zatzal, the previous Belzer Rebbe in Tel Aviv, and as he was there, and again he wasn't inside where the Rebbe was, but he was, you know, in whatever he was, in the shul, in the area where the Rebbe was, and a man whose job was, he was a tzava, which I am assuming means he was a dyer. He worked with dyes. You can imagine, you know, what his clothes look like. And he came rushing over to the gabbai of the Rebbe, and he said, he must go into the Rebbe. It's a very important, he has an emergency. Something terrible has happened. He must go speak to the Rebbe. He must go in front of the Rebbe, get a bracha, have the Rebbe daven for him. And the gabbai said, no way, not dressed the way you are. And he pleads with the gabbai, and he tells him the whole problem and everything that's happened to him. He must go see the Rebbe. So the gabbai says, go home, change your clothing. When you come back, you won't have to wait on line. I'll take you to the front of the line. But you can't go in front of the Rebbe, dressed like in that kind of clothing. So Rabbi Yosef Bishin said, like, that made him think, you know, if you have to make sure you're dressed properly to go in front of the Rebbe, right? All the more so, you have to make sure that you're dressed properly when you go before the Rebbe Nishol, when you're davening. So Zilberstein was the son-in-law of Rebbe Yashiv Zatzal. And he told over this story that he had, and he asked his father-in-law, basically, you know, how does a person measure whether the clothing that he's wearing is appropriate to davening or not? So Rebbe Yashiv told him like this. If this person who works and dies, and this is the way it's brought down. I'm not sure why he brings it down this way. He says, if, let's say, the way he's dressed, the way this dyer is dressed in his work clothes, right? If he wouldn't be embarrassed to walk down Rehov Yafo in Yerushalayim like that, how do I pick Rehov Yafo? Because it was a busy street. Yeah, I don't know about that, but he said, if he's not embarrassed to go to walk down Rehov Yafo in Yerushalayim in those kind of clothing, he can dive in that kind of clothing. But if he's embarrassed to walk down Rehov Yafo in that kind of clothing, he can't dive in that way. It's like, if you're not embarrassed to present yourself in front of people like that, then okay, then you could have it. I mean, even though you'd say maybe you should be better than that, but again, apparently, from the point of halacha, or what's again the minimum would be, if you're not embarrassed to go in front of people, or a lot of people, on a busy street, you're not, where a lot of people are going to see you, you know, I guess on a quiet street, you wouldn't care as much. But on a busy street with a lot of people, you know, more people take notice of you, you'd be more embarrassed to wear something that was dirty or unkept. And therefore he said to him, if you'd be embarrassed to go in public with it dressed like this, then he can't daven that way. But if he wouldn't be embarrassed, he could. And then Zilberstein adds something interesting. This is, I think, something on his own, I believe. He says, you know how certain people have like this plastic over their hats that they wear when it rains? Mm-hmm. So Zilberstein says that it would seem that the appropriate thing would be that you should not leave that on. If you daven wearing a hat, you should not leave that on your hat. Because, you know, it's only there to prevent your hat from being wet. It's really not something very becoming. It's not there to be worn. It's there to protect your hat. And therefore, once you're inside, you're in the protection, the appropriate thing would be to take it to take it off. So this is just an interesting little discussion that he has here, that he kind of starts off from the fact that how Yosef, before he went before the king, he had to dress properly, how much more so when we stand before Hashem.
So the reality, so we don't do it once. This is once with Paro, or once with the Rebbe. We daven three times a day, but also presumably you're always before Hashem. So is that why a firm Jew wears a suit and tie all the time?
Mm.
So you go to Lakewood, everybody's got a black suit, and a white shirt, and a tie.
In some degree, you could be right.
Yeah.
But we know that just in the way we act generally, right? We know that there is a certain closeness to Hashem that we have when we daven than when we walk around. We just know that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, when we're standing before Hashem by davening, we see that as a connection with Hashem, with a unique type of connection, or a closer connection, a closer interaction, more than otherwise. So therefore, there are specific halachas to that more than regular.
Okay. Now, what happens if the person, let's say, you know, they're really poor,
they don't have?
So what would a person say them?
Listen, that per person would walk in Rechav Yafav. That's all he has. That's what how he'd walk.
The thing is, would that person who's guarding, you know, the king at that point say, you can't come in? Or would they say,
yeah.
Or would they have something for them to put on? Like,
I don't know. I don't know. It's an interesting point. But this guy, they knew he had regular clothing, right?
And for sure.
So therefore, you got to dress properly. You shut it up yet?
Hmm?
Did you shut it up yet?
I did.
I was going to say on the thing. Okay, everybody out there, sorry.
Yeah.
We're closing to eat now. How about you say that?
Okay.
I don't know if it's